Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are going to be talking. It is a Friday, so we get into our show around, the hard economics of the country. So today, we're going to be talking around what South Africa's inflation risks, could be, just based off of some of the decisions that we've seen coming out of the United States recently. And to help us to unpack these issues, we are joined by Annabel Bishop, who is the chief economist at Investec. Annabel, once again, greetings to you.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Lovely to be on your show.
No. Thank you so much, sharing your time with us, because we always value, what you have to say. And I was reading something very interesting that you wrote this week around, the Fed, the Fed and their decision, to be keeping interest rates or thinking that inflation could be moderately just above 2%. Can you maybe give us some insight into what's actually going on that front?
Yes, of course. So look, I think, given the United States is seen as such a crucial part of the global economy and, of course, monetary policy formulation as well, the fact that the FOMC, which is the Federal Open Market Committee, or just, the United States MPC, like we have here in South Africa, their interest rate setting, in particular, they've been looking at the fact that inflation will rise this year and has been rising a bit because of base effects. That really means it was very low last year. And obviously now, as it's a year-on-year calculation, moving into the same period of April, May this year means you're going to get a push up to the figures. But they're calling that a transitory effect, a temporary effect, something which is a once off, something which is not permanent. And as a consequence of that, it really provides a much more sanguine approach to inflation. What we're really saying is they're not looking to hike interest rates anytime soon at all. It's a great positive for the economy. It's a great positive for the recovery in the United States, yes, but also, of course, for global recovery. And, given that it's a transitory situation, given that it's, a once-off increase, South Africa's going to have the same thing. And we believe that that could actually help our Reserve Bank be a bit more positive on the front of keeping interest rates unchanged at their Monetary Policy Committee next week instead of hiking, because, of course, we'll be having the same thing. In South Africa, you talk about their interest rates eventually returning to 2%. Our inflation rate is likely to jump to 4% in April. And that big jump up, of course, would give us negative real interest rates if we didn't hike our interest rates, remember our repo rates at 3.5%. But I think the Reserve Bank may tolerate this for a longer period. And of course, that's positive for South Africa's economy. It's positive for the fragile consumer, for the fact we've had many job losses in the South African economy, many company losses. But of course, it's positive for the global economy as well. If we don't see interest rate hikes happening around the world because inflation's going up, if most economies decide to adopt a wait and see approach, let those base effects come in, as the United States are certainly signaling, and eventually see if inflation becomes entrenched. They want their inflation rate at 2%. In fact, that's the informal target. They even like it above that for a significant period of time, because that shows that their economy is pulling through demand pressures.
Now, Annabel, one of the things when it comes to the US and its policies around interest rates, I definitely see why we, at least in the current environment, look at it as a positive, because, wherever you are around the world, there definitely needs to be growth. And if, the leading, country and monetary policy formulator in the US Fed is, picking that this is what they're going to do, is there anything to be said about any of the historic, historic criticisms over the last two decades about the U.S.'s stance on interest rates, because they remained, relatively at zero for, quite a long time. And some people blamed it on some of the greed that we saw in the markets. But, given this is a different time, what do you make of their current policy versus, maybe some of the largesse of the past?
I think that's such a good point, Madiwe. And I think, what they call zero bound interest rates. So, of course, interest rates essentially at 0% in the United States does often lead to irrational market exuberance. It does lead to high volatility, but particularly drive the prices up quite substantially. So, really drive up prices of assets, and not just equities in the markets, but even inflate what's happening in emerging markets. We know what happened last year with the Rand. We know we had that substantial currency weakness. And of course, that's a big negative volatility impact. Now we're having substantial strength. And really, we're a commodity currency in South Africa. And what that really means is we're a key exporter of a lot of metals and commodities. And of course, that really has an impact on the currency. And a commodity is also one of the assets that get driven up from a sentiment perspective. So in fact, market sentiment on expectations of strong global recovery has actually been driving commodity prices up significantly. And of course, that's benefited the Rand, as we said. But it's just one indication where if we keep interest rates at a zero bound level for a long period of time, you can eventually get markets becoming very overheated. So we're not in that position yet. And I think perhaps that's the answer to your question, Madi, where, really we're finding ourselves in a position where the global economy is still weak, but particularly as well, we're finding ourselves in a situation where right around the world, consumers are still battling, they're still struggling. It's been an enormous health crisis, but it's also been an economic crisis. And of course, there's been a big increase in poverty levels around the world. And even in the United States, there have been fiscal support programs, and of course, people are getting checks to households to help them make it through. But all of this really talks to the fact that the consumer environment, the business environment, is still fragile. So I think from that perspective, maintaining these zero bound interest rates for a significant period is very appropriate. In fact, even the FOMC members indicate that it's going to be a couple of years before we start to see them actually increase. And yes, I think to answer the question, that really does seem to be the right approach to take.
When it comes to a move in either direction, because I think at the moment we've sort of, I guess, accepted that things will remain relatively flat for some time. But given the current, what to call this, the current environment, could you maybe paint a picture for us just around what maybe a 25 or 50 basis point increase or decrease could possibly mean if the MPC was to maybe go rogue and decide to move in a different direction, compared to where we think things are going to go?
So I think a 25 basis point decrease would be very welcome. And I suppose it could result in some significant rand weakness because that's not what markets are expecting. And also, of course, as well, at the same time, you get the inflation increase. So that's quite unlikely. We have quite a low probability. An increase, which you quite rightly indicate is something we should think about. Well, really, it doesn't have a very large impact on its own. A small 0.25% hike in interest rates, yes, it does put some upward pressure on your repayments, but it's not the same as a 1% or a 2% hike in interest rates. But Madhuri, and I'd go a bit deeper. I'd say it has a negative impact on confidence, both on consumer confidence and, of course, on business confidence as well. And given that the economy is so weak and that there's such a slow recovery happening and it's taking such a long time for South Africa's economy to pick up, I think it would actually be quite a negative move.
It's actually very interesting that you describe it that way. I think more than anything else, I guess the confidence, because that confidence factor is very important, especially when you're thinking about that investment from the outside. Apart from the commodity prices, I guess buoying the rand, is there anything at the moment apart from that, inherently that's giving us rand strength, or as always, is it what you call this? Is it as always those exogenous factors that are affecting us and that we're benefiting from?
So I think, we've talked about commodity prices at length and the rand being a commodity currency. But of course, our rand is also an emerging market currency. And as we were talking about earlier, there's been that positive sentiment in global financial markets. And that's provided some support for the rand as well, probably less than the support we're getting from commodity prices. And in fact, that's why the rand tends to lead the emerging market currency pack. If you look at it on the Bloomberg's ranker, up around 30% year on year. Yes, it had particular lows last year as well, but that, of course, again, was because of the collapse in commodity prices. And now, of course, we're having the big recovery, having these base effects coming through. You also talk about, what other drivers there could be. I think, we should look at the bond flows, bond and equity flows. They haven't been very substantial. They haven't been enough on their own to drive this big recovery in the rand this year. But of course, if you have a look at the short-term carry trade, the very short-term movements, you know, there is still a good carry trade differential. You know, our interest rates are still giving a good return on a real basis. In other words, they're still positive. They haven't become negative. Of course, we wait to see what happens when inflation jumps up next month. But perhaps on a wider basis, also what you're getting at. And I do look at the political environment in South Africa that's changing. You know, the prosecutions we're increasingly seeing for corruption, the changes inside the ANC, as well as it tries to reinvent itself as a party which does not tolerate corruption. Although, of course, you know, interesting listening to the comments from the president recently at the commission, and, you know, really just looking at itself and reflecting on its skills capacity in government, as well as the impact of corruption, and particularly also as well the positive things coming through on the growth and reform plan from government, the changes coming through on the IRP 219 electricity front to build us a bigger electricity capacity, but also of course the fact that we are trying to curtail our government finances. You know that this year we didn't see a runaway budget like we've seen many other years. I think, as you said, there are so many different factors at play for our rand.
The other thing to, you know, consider, because I like the fact that you're bringing in the political issues and some of the things that may drive some of that sentiment. Interestingly enough, the other day we had a guest on who was talking to us about how strike season, which is, I guess, a perennial issue in South Africa, you know, might have some impact on, you know, driving, I guess, in a negative sense, negative sentiment around the economy for domestic and foreign investors when they look at South Africa, and especially because, you know, there's a lot of places that people can plow their money. I would be interested to maybe get your thoughts on that, because you did bring in the political factors. Do you think, you know, our current strike season might, you know, because South Africa is really trying to fight for that growth, is that a risk?
I agree with you. You know, it is a risk. Again, I would also bring in another risk, anyway, and that's, of course, the fact that we move into credit rating season as well next month. So basically next week, start of May, and on the 7th, we have already one agency looking at us with a negative outlook for a credit rating downgrade. And of course, you know, we're sitting in an environment where our government bonds, the amount of supply, you know, our borrowing, our planned trajectory of borrowing is much worse than our peers. So we are much higher than the other emerging market economies, and of course as well the other middle income economies. So together, you know, at about 80% of GDP where our debt is at the moment, and they're obviously closer to around 60% of GDP, and that's just, you know, where debt is, not even the planned trajectory in terms of borrowings. Well that's a big risk for the rand, because, you know, Moody's has us on a negative outlook, and they're giving us a rating review on the 7th of May, and of course S&P on the 21st of May, and Fitch sometime around there. Now, these rating agencies look very closely at this important point you've made about the salaries and wages of civil servants, you know, the general strike as well, because of course that's the biggest component in expenditure in the budget. And, you know, the fact that they have us on a negative outlook means that they are looking to downgrade us. It means they will downgrade us. It doesn't mean they'll downgrade us at their May meetings. They may leave it until their November meetings. What doesn't mean they actually will downgrade us at all eventually, because they could always put you back on a positive outlook, and that means no downgrade. On a stable outlook, and that means no downgrade, or a positive outlook, which means that you could get an upgrade. But at the moment, they've said, even despite the budget, where we saw that lowering of the planned debt trajectory, they still have us on a negative outlook. And I think, you know, having some conversations with the rating agencies myself, they've actually said to me, you know, we're looking very closely at this area in the budget, the salary and wage increases, and if government sticks to the salary and wage increases they plan in the budget, if government sticks to the civil servant expenditure and they plan the budget and don't put through big salary and wage increases and cave in to these strikes and political pressure, then we may not receive credit rating downgrades. And I think that's so key. And again, you mentioned international investors as well, and of course what our bonds are rated at impacts international investors in our portfolio flows, as well as, of course, our equities. Companies also affected by credit ratings. And even just from a sentiment perspective as well, if South Africa, you know, continues to show policy flip-flops like we had under Zuma, if we say we're really going to get our government finance under control and we give a strong message in the budget in February, as we did, that we're going to, you know, not allow excessive increases, then, of course, as you said, we move into strike season and the strikes prove disruptive and government caves in and gives them, then unfortunately, we will see that type of disinvestment as a consequence. We will see the credit rating downgrades. It doesn't mean we'll see the disinvestment even immediately. It could happen in a risk-off period. As we spoke about earlier, markets are in an exuberant phase and a strong risk-on phase at the moment.
When it comes to all of that, I just wanted to follow up to get your thoughts on, I guess, that what you're saying moving into, I think you said credit rating season. And, you know, we talk about how the COVID-19 pandemic has changed, you know, so many things in the world, our way of life, our way of working, all of these things. And I wanted to maybe get your thoughts around, in a post-pandemic world, apart from the portfolio flows that you highlighted, bonds, etc., and how, you know, those credit ratings are important for those things. But apart from portfolio flows, how important are, I guess, credit ratings in a post-pandemic environment, simply because everyone has really just gone through all of it?
Yes, and I think, you know, that's such a key point. We've seen debt levels rise everywhere. Public debt everywhere has increased. But again, you know, I think we'd come back to the way that the credit ratings rank us, and that is they rank us against our peers. They really look at us in terms of how likely are you to repay your debt. And just the same as a household, they'll determine it in terms of what is your quantity of debt and what is your income. And of course, you know, compared to other households, other emerging markets, other middle-income economies, South Africa is doing worse. In other words, our supply of debt is much higher. And again, you know, we're talking about 80% of GDP as opposed to 60%, which is the norm, 60% for the middle-income emerging market economies that has risen to last year because of the impact they've had from their fiscal expenditure due to the COVID crisis. And, you know, they'll rank us in terms of our peers. And if we no longer are meeting the same criteria our peers, will have to move us down to a rung or two below so we get ourselves into new peers. And of course, that's when we start to move towards the credit ratings of Lesotho and, you know, a lot more countries in Africa. We start to become equivalent to those because our borrowing is so substantial. And we recall as well that our economic recovery is not expected to be quick. It's expected to be quite slow as well.
And then lastly, because of everything, I think it sort of helps to bring, you know, things together. How are the households doing, especially just around some of the, I think it's a household, a sentiment around the household sector. Where do you see that?
You know, we saw quite a good report come out on the Consumer Vulnerability Index, you know, coming through from Momentum. And of course, that really showed to us that consumers are still very, very vulnerable and they're still in the danger zone. They've got an indicator, the green zone, you know, the red zone, they're still in the red zone. They're still extremely fragile. And, you know, we have seen some improvement in employment levels, but we haven't recouped the loss of jobs from last year. You know, we're still over a million people who've lost their jobs. Yes, we expect as we move forwards, we'll see more and more people gain jobs each quarter, but it was coming at a bad time when South Africa's unemployment rate was already, you know, very high before the crisis. So those people increasingly looking for jobs, remember, you know, as government support payments in South Africa start to wane, then of course those people will increasingly come back into the job market. They'll try and look for jobs, and that'll push up our unemployment rate. So all of these factors add to the difficulty that consumers are experiencing overall in South Africa. It adds to the problem that you know, we obviously face as a nation, from poverty levels, from living standard levels, and of course from government finance levels. What we'd like is to have everyone in a good, well-paying job throughout the whole of South Africa with the correct skills and obviously experience and ability to contribute meaningfully to the economy, to drive it forwards and provide strong economic growth and obviously high tax revenues for governments as a consequence, that then allows government to get rid of its debt, not be in this dire credit rating position, and actually provide a huge amount of support to those in need. But unfortunately, we have far fewer people in the formal job sector than we have out of it. If we include dependents such as, you know, children, I mean, the child support grant, it's towards the 18 million mark. And of course, you know, pensioners and other people who rely on the state for funding as well, if you include all of those people, you know, and we're relying on so few to make the tax revenue income come through for government. And then, of course, if you actually move into your upper income earners, you know, there's a tiny, tiny amount, and they, of course, pay the bulk of the taxes. So South Africa desperately needs to create a lot more wealthy people in South Africa. Yes, but but they need to be productive members of society, obviously drive strong business and corporate growth and employment. But also, of course, as well, we need to increase our middle class very much more substantially as well, continue to draw out people in the lower living standards into the middle LSM groups, as we saw under the Thabo Mbeki years, when people migrated out of your LSM ones and due both to good government policies he instituted in that time because of the strong fiscal nature government finances that they brought about, but also, of course, as well, due to the strong economic growth rate. So these are all factors that are important for an economy to thrive.
And then lastly for us, because this is something that we always ask you when we have you on, is your outlook for the country and where your growth estimates sit. I usually like asking this question because it's always fascinating to see, I guess, the evolution, because at the start of the year, one might think that, that we're going to experience base effects and South Africa might see, 4% growth or something. But as the year progresses and, different things start happening, all of those adjustments. So keen to hear where your forecasts are lying at the moment.
Yes, of course. Look, I would say I'm still probably similar. I'm still seeing around 3%, but I'm hoping that the data improves a bit. We've saw some poor data come out recently. We saw some very good data come out as well. We've seen particularly strong growth, as all of us would expect, in the mining data. But of course, the transactional data in the economy, that shows, the transactions between individuals and business, really proper economic activity overall on a macro basis, your overall GDP, that's been showing slower growth, as which is worrying between the quarters. And yes, some of that was base effects from last year, but, that's really showed a big slowdown in the first quarter. Still positive, but we're showing, the economy moved towards the 0% mark, down below the 2% mark. I mean, the fourth quarter, as we know, was close to 6%. So, of course, that's a worry, and moving forwards into this year, we're hoping to see a pickup. A lot depends on electricity production as well. Remember, we had load shedding in March, and that worries us for industrial production that month. We're hoping that we see an improvement in economic activity overall this year. But unfortunately, we're probably closer to the 3.5% marker. Maybe that's being too optimistic. We do have an official figure of 3.2. And as I said, we're looking maybe to come out close to 3.5, 3.6, and that's probably will be our revision in June. But we worry that if we do that and suddenly load shedding becomes a big issue, particularly, as we move into the winter months, then, of course, that would be very damaging.
All right. So that's been it. We're with Annabel Bishop, who is the chief economist at Investec, just highlighting some of the issues around inflation, especially as the U.S. Fed has decided that, things are going to remain relatively the same. We might see some base effects over time. And she's saying that because everyone looks to the U.S. Fed for a lot of their policy direction, we're likely to see, I guess, similar action by the Monetary Policy Committee of the South African Reserve Bank as they meet in the coming, it should be the coming week or so, around some of their decisions. Also talking about the rand and how as an emerging market and also as a big commodity player in the world, there has been that strength that's come through, and that's at least for now expected to continue. And also just highlighting the continued importance of credit ratings, because they really do shape how sentiment is affected when you're looking at the country, and highlighting the risk that's coming out from things like load shedding, the potential risk or investors and ratings agency keeping an eye on salaries and wages when it comes to the strike season, and what is actually going to come out of all of those issues and how they affect the rating of the country. So that's been it. Annabel, thank you so much for being with us.
It's such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for a lovely interview, Madiwa.
This is Madiwa's Take.
Always a fascinating discussion when we get to talk to Annabel and her highlighting these inflation issues. And I really hoped that it does play out the way that she is talking about, because low interest rates, they do a lot to help people to, you know, just a lot of economic activity, people borrowing money, people just deciding that they're going to invest more. And I guess, you know, making South Africa a bit more of an attractive place for, you know, someone to come and invest their money locally. But at the same time, putting a little bit of relief on the side of consumers who have, you know, been battered. I think that's been well documented over the last couple of months. And what she said at the end about households really feeling the pressure and the fact that we do need to get more and more people, you know, earning more. We need to grow the middle class. We need to just get employment up. We need to get higher types of employment up. That's really important as a country, and especially if we're going to be helping to solve a lot of the issues, you know, increasing consumer spending, which increases the rate of business activity, but at the same time increasing the rates at which the South African Revenue Service can collect taxes, which then increases, you know, the amount of money that they have on hand, and thereby also hopefully reducing the amounts of money that have to be borrowed to sustain the fiscus. All of these issues, but on the side of inflation, just hoping that all of it around the world can be sort of be kept in check. We've had, you know, one financial crisis after another, and hopefully this particular one, simply because it's the one that the entire world has really felt all at the same time, we just hope that there is a disciplined approach that regulators and policymakers take when it comes to addressing this, you know, particularly around interest rates. They can't remain at a, you know, zero bound, you know, for too long. It's necessary at the moment, but it can't be to the extent that we've seen in places like the US over the last couple of decades, because that then, you know, feeds into some of the largesse and exuberance, as Annabelle described it, that, you know, ends up creeping into some of the markets. So really hoping that there is that disciplined approach and that we can see that recovery coming in through the year. That 3 to 3.5% that she's talking about, you know, hopefully we see that, you know, coming in, and then, you know, just hoping that after this, that it will be, you know, sustained growth as opposed to some of the base effects that we have been seeing. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Life. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.